This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor super fan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, welcome to Bustin' Balls. I'm Pat Caputo along with the webmaster extraordinaire, Evan Jenkins. And don't forget to like us. Subscribe to us or wherever you get your podcasts, and we're here talking about the Tigers. They got their final roster cuts. Torque made the team. Ryan Kreidler made the team. Justin Henry Malloy is headed to the minors, and you're getting Margot to play center field, and it's just a 100% not anything that the Tigers expected. But I got to tell you, Evan, I'm glad they put Torque on the team. Torque earned his way on the team. You wanted him to show progress. He hit five home runs this spring, almost double the output of anybody else. He played well, did what was asked, and they need right-handed power. And, he had a 781 OPS the second when he came back last year in 138 at-bats. Six home runs, and actually he played pretty well. Didn't do so well in the postseason, but he did well before that and helped the Tigers get to the postseason. And in retrospect, I'm kind of wondering, did the Tigers overreact to Torque's first half of the year, and is he primed for a bounce back? I think it's entirely possible that could happen.
Now, go ahead. You might know this offhand, and if you don't, then shame on me for even asking the question. But the pitching that Torque was going against in spring training, was it spring training pitching?
Yeah.
Or was it like legit big leaguers? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes you get into a game, you're in a phase four.
He did get some of his home runs off other guys that were not necessarily the top guys, but he did hit well against the major leaguers, who aren't really throwing all their arsenal and all that, and that remains to be seen, and that's right. A good question. But the thing is, what's the point of putting him in that position, seeing how he'll react when he reacts that way? And he did have a 781 OPS when he came back from the minor leagues last year. Why would you not put him on your team? He did perform for you late last year reasonably well. The 781 OPS is well above major league average, and certainly on the Tigers, it's good. And the question is, did they overreact by moving Colt Keith to first? Because Colt Keith made in 15 games at first base four errors. And they signed Torres, who give them a nice shot in the arm offensively, I feel. But he led the league in errors the last 2 years for second baseman and had bad metrics defensively. So you couple all that in, you wonder, hey, how is this all going to sort out? And where's Kerry Carpenter? Is he going to be a DH? Is he going to, you know, play right field? They got a total mess out in right field, and the outfield's a mess. So Tor could help them early in the year, and he did respond the right way. Both he and Casey Mize had big spring trainings. That's all you can ask.
Yep.
And Casey Mize earned his spot in the rotation. So, and I get it, you know, spring training doesn't mean that much ultimately as a guide to performance, but it means something. And that's all those guys could do it. So I have no problem with Torque making it. I think he has more upside than Justin Henry Molloy. And, you know, I read an article, I forget where, it said, when Molloy can play outfield, no, he can't.
Well, and, yeah, and that's why he didn't get, he's not on the team right now.
Yeah, he's a one-trick pony, and they feel like, and justifiably, that Torque has more lightning in his bat. But Henry Molloy has some good things because it's plate discipline, strike zone discipline. That's his strength. So I'm not trying to say Jay Hinn's not, you know, a useful player or whatever. It's just Torque, I think, is the right call here.
Could you envision the Tigers, A.J. Hinch, and the coaching staff getting together and actually talking about playing Torque at first when he's in the game and having Keith DH?
Well, I think you could have a situation where Keith plays second base, too.
Okay.
You know, I think one of the things you're going to see is A.J. Hinch going all over the place, and that's dangerous because his pitching chaos worked. But in the past, and he did a pretty good job with lineup flexibility a couple years ago when, you know, 2023. But last year when he got a little bit too crazy that way, not a crazy, not in, he's actually crazy, but in terms of his lineups, by with trying to fit square pegs into round holes. Or is it a square peg, Evan, into a round hole? And just totally, you know, messing it all up, so.
And I've been kind of thinking about this, too, just in regards to the Tigers and, like, kind of, it seems like, almost all of their positions are platoon positions right now, except for Torres and Colt Keith. I think those are the two mainstays, and Riley Green, I guess, would be the other in your lineup.
But Green, definitely.
But do you imagine, other than those three, the other six positions, or I guess five positions, not the pitcher, will be platoon this year?
Well, that's the other thing. All right, you going to platoon Javi? What are you going to do with Javi? You know, that's he hit 184 this spring.
Not good.
And, you know, people saying that all of a sudden he looks like himself, and that's a matter of convenience, not actually what is probable. I hope I'm wrong on that, and he has a comeback season. You can hope for average defense, and Sweeney's got a lot of holes in his swing. You know, a column I just wrote about, I say he's got more holes in his swing than a aerated golf green.
The worst.
The worst. You know.
And there's nothing worse than that, Pat.
And those little plugs.
Oh, that looks like goose poop.
Yeah. That's what I look at their shortstop position as.
Goose poop.
Yeah, well, goose poop and
and holes.
Aerated golf green. More holes. So, oh. And I want to be optimistic, all right? But I hate to use something as trite as this, but it's you know, the old Eminem song, Back to Reality, Oops, Here Comes Gravity, because all this optimism about spring and Javi and, you know, the Torque is hitting the ball and, you know, oh, my gosh. The fact that they had those two injuries is just, you know, set their lineup on fire. And they're minus at pretty much every position except for left fielder and catcher, which they're very good at those two positions. And the question is going to have to be, some things are going to have to be made up by Carpenter being in the lineup every day. It's going to be interesting whether they give him a shot against lefties. Green establishing himself and staying healthy, you know, to play 150 games. And last year he got 137 in. They need unexpected surprise. Could it be Torque? Could it be Mize? I think their pitching is really good. This thing with Foley not making the team.
Yeah.
I think that that is something because he gave him a lot of good outings last year.
He was the man last year to start the year, really.
Yeah, and he had a pretty good year until the end. But they have a lot of power arms out there. And, again, I think it was the right call to keep Hanafy because he's throwing the ball better right now. This isn't about what you did. It's about what you're going to do. So, but I'm not overly optimistic. I can't help it. Their schedule is very difficult to start the year. The dozen games in, they played the Yankees and the Dodgers to open the season. And Tarek Skubal can't pitch every game. I thought Flaherty threw the ball well this spring, though. I think Reese Olson was pretty good. I have a lot of belief in Jackson Job.
Yeah.
And
pitched well on Tuesday night.
And I think you're going to like what you see from Casey Mize this year. So, but it doesn't help great pitching to have bad defense.
Well, and that's what I was just going to ask is with the uncertainty of what the outfield actually is going to look like until we see them take the field Thursday, how much could that affect the actual pitching to not necessarily know what you got up the middle? I mean, everybody talks about up the middle defense in baseball, where
it was such a strength.
Yes.
The outfield defense, especially in Comerica Park where there's so much room, because Parker Meadows is, I feel, and the metrics back this up to a large degree, but the eyeball test definitely does, the best defensive outfielder in the game. That sounds crazy, but it's true.
Dude, the amount of space that he covers out there
is
amazing. Crazy.
And he makes difficult catches look routine. And he runs in the top 7th percentile of major league players. And Verlin in right field is a good defender. And he was their best third baseman. But again, I wouldn't have kept Chase Young. I wouldn't have because he didn't show that he was hitting in spring training. That's a terrible message.
Yeah.
So, have him go down there and prove it. So it'll be interesting to see how it sorts out. And also, when they come out with the minor league assignments, I'm expecting Clark, McGonagall, and Brusino to be at West Michigan to start the year, which will make that team really, really interesting at the beginning of the year. I bet they put Lorenzo in Erie because he has played 2 full seasons each level and appears to be ready for that. And it's going to be interesting to see how Rayner does his first year out, their first-round pick last year, because he hasn't played professional baseball yet.
Right.
So we're going to see that, and that'll be fascinating. And there are some but there's nobody that is going to come up and save the day right now, position player-wise. It's just not going to happen. People, I get a lot of – they're putting Kreidler out there. And I heard Scott Harris say this. I saw the video of it, so it wasn't misquoted. He said that he thought Ryan Kreidler was an elite defender at shortstop and center field. I think he has potential to be a good defender. At best, average, and certainly not in center field, unless there's something I don't know here. He played a lot of center field, though. They did put him out there last year, so he's not unfamiliar with the position. But that's a bit of a stretch. And Navigato, I keep hearing about that. He's a Triple-A player.
Yeah.
If you put him in the major leagues, you might get a week or two out of him. Maybe they'll try that at some point. But he's kind of this year's Buddy Kennedy type.
All about him.
Well, he won a couple games for him.
No, he did. You're right.
And then you move on, and you need, but not having Parker Meadows especially for that long.
Does that injury really? To me, it concerns me big time when I hear a player can't feel his arm. Like that's very, very concerning. But I don't know if there's like no solution to that. You know what I mean? I don't know if a surgery would help that or what it might be, but it's kind of crazy to think that the season is
never
kind of hanging on him.
I've covered sports for 40 years. 41 now.
I'm 41.
Yeah, 41 years. 41 years I've been in the business. Actually, almost 42. In all that time and all the baseball that I've covered, I've been a card-carrying member of the Baseball Writers Association since 1986.
That means this man can go to any baseball game in America he wants to.
For the rest of my life.
Yep.
Literally.
just awesome.
Yeah, it is. But I'll say this. I've never heard of anything like that.
It's wild.
Where the nerve has to wake up.
Like, what does that mean?
I don't know what it means. What is it? A bear in hibernation?
It's crazy to me. And then the fact when they put him on the 60-day IL, sorry, it's not the DL anymore, I was like, wait, is that retroactive? And no, it wasn't. And then my next thought was, okay, so he gets off that 60-day DL, let's say, what, 40 days in? Let's say his arm's feeling better, he goes down and he plays with the AAA team. But
you only get a couple weeks on your rehab assignment.
That's what I thought. And it's
but
just,
but he won't be active, so you can't really option him.
So, but the question that I have from that, are we really going to see Javier Baez play center field in a Major League Baseball game?
Yeah, if they put Javi in center and they put Torque in right, my head will explode.
Right? Might as well put you and I out there.
You know, and again, it goes down to spring training. And look, I'm not trying to bite the hand that feeds me at all, because I was a beat writer for many years, yeah, as you know. And I know what the spring training optimism is. But when they put Torque out in right field, and one of the headlines, and it was one of the Detroit websites, I forget which, it said, Torque passes first test in right field. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah, and he didn't even get a ball hit to him.
Well, he did.
And he went all Bo Jackson on it.
There was a ball that was hit. He was playing, you know, it was against Pittsburgh, the game I saw. And the ball was hit off the end of the bat into the corner. And he was playing shading toward left field, and he had to chase the ball down. Now, the ball, right fielder, major league right fielder, an average one, would have got the ball before it went into the corner. He didn't get to the ball. You know, he looked like he was loping after it, like he was in batting practice. Kind of, I call it the Nick Castellanos chasing a ball in the corner thing. That's exactly what Nick Castellanos looks like when he goes after a ball. And then it kind of rolls around the wall a little bit as it goes into the thing. And then he picks it up and he throws the cutoff throw, because Torque doesn't have a very good arm. He throws the ball. It's kind of like whoever was at second base and was playing the cutoff. And a double turned into a triple. So later in that same game, there's a base hit. It's in left center field, a line drive single. But it's, you know, up the gap. So a left fielder, a good left field, like Riley Green, he'd go over there, get that ball, retrieve it, throw it in, it's a single. Malloy looks at it like, well, the ball's going up the gap, and it just goes by him, and he kind of goes up there and gets it and turns into a double. These extra bases, if you add that up enough, becomes a problem. So, it doesn't work. I've seen managers, and the great managers tend to try this, and it's something that will sometimes work. But Sparky did it one time. He put Matt Noakes in right field. You know, he just envisioned that. And Matt Noakes was a catcher, you know, and but he couldn't throw. He had trouble. He had the thing, you know, where he had trouble throwing the ball back to the pitcher.
Oh, he's like Chuck Knoblauch.
Yeah, except he was a catcher. Mackie Sasser was the one that is a catcher for the Mets who had it. And he was. And it really wasn't known, but Sparky was very fearful that it would get caught. Noakes was a pretty good left-handed hitter. Put him on right field. It was a disaster. Okay, you know, first ball hit, it's a little low line drive, goes over his head. And then when you see a guy that's out of position chase after a ball, it's like watching a dude in your softball league chase after a ball when it's out to the fence. Major league dudes go over there and they retrieve that ball and get it in.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's totally different than any other level. And you just can't do that. And this thing with McKinstry and Baez at third, I mean, that's incredible when you look at that. You know, McKinstry had the three-base error. I call it the Zach McKinstry hat trick. I don't know if I've, you know, said this, but a three-base error, a three-run homer like he had in that game. He gave up a three-run homer and had a three-run error. And later on, he ran himself into a triple play in the game against the Phillies. the Zach McKinstry hat trick. And look, now Zach McKinstry's made the major leagues, and he can run. And
absolutely.
But A.J. Hinch just loves the guy. So they feel like it's like Don Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the Donnie Kelly baby thing. You know, it's Leland went, I got Don Kelly to play shortstop or whatever he used to. You know.
But at least with that team, you had six superstars out there that you were like, it was a cute little story.
You could kind of hide them a little bit, but it got a little frustrating. Yeah, I was like, hey, what's Don Kelly doing on the team? And but the McKinstry, A.J. Hinch loves the guy because he can run. He does run well, and he's got a strong arm, but he's a jack-of-all-trades, master of none. He really doesn't play any position well.
Yeah.
So maybe his best position actually is short when I think about it. So I don't know how they're going to handle third. I thought they might get a Gio Urshela type. But Ibanez is not a good fielder. He has terrible hands. This is, you know, a problem for them. And they may be able to compensate to a degree because I think their offense will be better. If Keith takes a step forward, Green becomes the star that he seems to be on the verge of. Carpenter has really done well, and he's playing.
Well, and those two need to stay healthy as well, Pat. Those two have been enigmas when it comes to injuries.
Absolutely. And I think Dylan Dingler is going to be better than what most people think offensively. But I do wonder, you know, I get this question a lot. Why did they let Gage Workman go?
The kid that they drafted out of LSU, third baseman?
No, ASU. College teammate. The Tigers drafted Torque as a third baseman, then later in the draft actually took the guy who was playing third base from ASU. I don't know if they announced him as a shortstop or not. I don't know. That was crazy. But Workman made the Cubs, but he didn't play in those first two games. And they have to keep him. So are they going to keep him? And if they do offer him back to the Tigers, he would definitely be another option. I know it was at Double-A, but he had 89 RBI last year. He did hit some home runs. And he's got no strike zone discipline compared to, you know, what they want comparatively. But he is somebody who can, I think, play third base better than both McKinstry and Andy Ibanez. So I wonder if that'll be a development that happens, because people ask about that all the time. And, sometimes people ask something like that, and it's like, it seems so obvious that they think I'm going to say it's crazy, but it is so obvious. They should not have let him make him available for that draft, and they should have kept him on their 40-man during offseason.
But did you know his dad also was a minor league baseball player?
Who, Workman?
Yeah. You know his first name?
No.
Wid. W-I-D-D.
Wid Workman? Wow.
Yeah, he played 94 career games in minor league baseball. Pitcher.
The,
Wid.
The, Kreidler's dad's a sports writer.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, they got some interesting views. I remember we had him on Tiger Talk one time, Kreidler, and I'm like, yeah, this guy's analyzing how I'm doing my time.
But, hey, at least he has preparation, right? A lot of these guys come in and they're like, holy crap. Good.
But I've always felt he was a 4A player, and I hope I'm wrong about that.
Well, and that's what I was just reading when I Googled his name was the Cubs had the choice. Are they going to return him if they seem he's unprepared? He's never played over Double-A, right?
He might have had some time at Triple-A and did not do well.
Okay.
Last year was a breakout year for him statistically. But he does have some tools, and there's a lot of people who've liked him. I've never been that particularly high on Gage Workman, to be honest with you. But there are those who've thought that he was going to play in the major leagues. So that possibility could open up, and it'll be interesting whether they'll admit that that might have been a mistake to keep him on there and put him in, or whether they're going to go with this ridiculous third base platoon.
I would guess it's the latter. It's very, very few and far between you hear a GM or a manager or a coach admit a mistake.
And I'm guessing that if Chase Young hits, and Chase Young is going to hit.
Sure.
If he hits well at the start of the year, he may be called up quickly, because it looked like actually he was playing a pretty good third base from what I can tell. You know, I watched their preseason games that were on TV. I don't know how many there were, and went over them, you know, his particular games, and tried to look at him defensively. He made some nice plays. I mean, not anything spectacular that's going to win him a Gold Glove, but the plays that he kind of struggled with last year, even if he got the out, he did make them look routine this year.
Have your expectations for the team changed? Meaning,
yes.
Do you think that they need to go on an incredible run again at the end of the year in order to make the playoffs?
Nothing about sports is simplistic.
No.
Nothing. You know, and everything's fluid.
Mm-hmm.
And but I'll say that at the in the offseason, I looked at it this way. Even though they didn't get Bregman, which I really didn't think they were going to, but apparently they came pretty close to doing it.
I know, if you listen to what he has to say.
Yeah, so... I trust that. And that, yeah, if they had him, there would be a different dynamic to it, no question. It may not be the best thing long term, but right now it would be. It certainly would look better. But I'll say, when I looked at him, I said, well, they added $65 million plus to payroll. You know, Brebbia and, you know, of course, Flaherty coming back. And, you know, who knows what they're going to get out of Cobb. But, you know, that was money that they spent. Torres, that's a right-handed mm-hmm. hitter that they really needed. And so they added, you know, a couple relievers added to their strength, which was pitching, which isn't a bad idea. Because it can get fickle and it can go sideways, and the more arms you have, the better. And they got a couple guys coming up that can help them, you know, getting Job and all that. I thought, hey, you know what? And I expected Mize to have a bounce back, and I'm thinking they can win 90 games, 92. But when Parker Meadows is, that's when he's in the equation. When Matt Verling's in the equation, that's just a double. That's just totally getting. I'll use the term. That's. Getting fucked.
Oh, yeah.
They totally got fucked by luck.
And bad luck.
Bad luck. And, you know, it's like you couldn't come up with a combination of one thing that would, you know, throw a sour pill into what they're trying to do more than those two guys. With those type of injuries, both like in the first exhibition game.
It's crazy.
To come up that screw them over. I mean, and how they react to that, I don't know. That's going to be interesting. But, you know, the only thing I can say is the narrative of Javi, you know, I can understand fans' frustration. I think Vegas had him up to 84.5 and then dropped him back to 83
yeah.
For wins. You know, I think that to get to that, I think would be quite an accomplishment. But they're going to have to. You know, survive the first part of the year because they do not play weak teams.
It is March. Survive in advance.
Well, March, April, and they really don't. Their schedule is hard until it gets to May.
Yeah.
Then they get a little bit of a break. So they're going to have to stay in it, and it's going to have to be pitching that carries them.
Well, luckily the Central isn't exactly full of teams that are going to make World Series.
Well,
pushes.
The Guardians clearly, in my opinion, took a step back.
Big time.
I don't know why they got rid of Jimenez and Naylor. Those are two of their best players. And I, you know, the Royals aren't bad. The Twins, and I've said this a lot, they're the outlier because they have three number one draft picks. Royce Lewis,
yep.
Buxton, and of course Carlos Correa, who they don't play 100 games last year.
I know.
So none of them, and Buxton never does.
No.
And Royce Lewis never does.
But when they're out there, they're phenomenal.
And Royce Lewis in particular, scary, man.
Yeah.
You know, Correa is just, he's steady more than Dynamo and Buxton. Buxton, I don't know what to make of that. He's always hurt.
Always. But he plays a great center field when
but
he's
Royce,
out there.
Royce Lewis type of guy, if he plays 150 games, he'll hit 45 home runs.
Yeah.
All right. So Minnesota with those three, all first overall picks in the draft. You know, that's going to be – well, I think Buxton might have been second. I'd double check on that. But when you look at this team – Minnesota, if those guys are healthy, they're the best team in the division. You know, White Sox are going to completely blow again. And I always thought that Jonathan India had kind of underachieved from what I expected. The kid from Florida, and he was traded for Brady Singer, his teammate from Florida. And I always thought Brady Singer, I don't know, because of the Casey Mize factor or whatever, has always stuck it up the Tigers' ass every time he's pitched against them. So maybe it's going to be a, you know, that'll help the Tigers in a way. But Kansas City's all right. I wouldn't sleep on them, but none of those teams are great.
And you're right. Buxton was the second overall pick because his teammate, Correa, went right before him.
That's right. With Houston.
Yep.
So
2012.
Yeah, it was in that draft. But he was expected to be one, and Houston went cheaper on the first-round pick, actually. Correa's out of Puerto Rico. He was drafted. And that ended up being better than their other pick. But that's the way they would do it. They would underslot on the first pick. But it turned out Correa wasn't like a couple of their other picks that they drafted who didn't pan out. This guy, Brady Aiken.
Oh, God.
It was almost like they, because they wanted to use their slot money for other guys later. That was one of the ways that the Houston Astros were trying to use analytics to game the system, so to speak. So, but anyway, what's your prediction, Evan? What do you think the Tigers will do? How many wins? Give me a number now.
80. I don't think they're going to be a 500 team this year. I think the hole is going to be too big. There's so much uncertainty. In my mind, I'm already preparing for Green and Carpenter to get hurt. And if that happens, especially at the same time, I have no idea what this team's going to look like. I love the Tigers. I want them to win. There's nothing more.
I know that.
Other than a Michigan State national championship this year, the Tigers winning a World Series is like right there with me.
Spartan baseball is not ready for that.
No, the baseball team isn't.
Hockey, maybe.
Hockey might win it for me, but hockey's not my thing. I need basketball. But then, listen, if the pitching is what
football
we think
won't.
It's going to be, they'll be there at the end of the year. So I think 80, and I have a right to change that opinion, Pat.
Well, yeah, it's all fluid. I hate making predictions.
Well, especially when they play 162 of these things.
Well, last year I said they would win 84 games, and then in July, I thought I was like the biggest dumbass in the history of the world.
I know, that's the
thing.
And
then all of a sudden it was like, oh, maybe I was too low. And they end up winning 86.
Yeah,
well. So it doesn't really matter. We're just having some fun.
Yeah.
I'll stick with 83.
Okay. Ballpark.
I think Vegas has kind of got the pretty
before
good
we end it, Pat, I do have to ask you one thing.
Sure.
Are you pissed the keyhole is gone at Comerica Park?
No.
People making a big deal about that. I'm like, how many pitches are really hit in that stripe? Back to the pitching.
I don't know. I kind of liked it because it was unique and
sure.
It was throwback.
And it reminds you of baseball in the 80s or whatever it might be, early 90s.
It goes back to like way old
sure.
baseball.
Sure. Well, I'm thinking about me.
No, it goes way back. When I was growing up, like when you were a kid, the age I had, nobody had that. Not a single team.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then they started bringing it back as kind of a traditional thing because that was what they used to do way back in the day. I mean, we're talking about the turn of the century and things. So the previous century.
Yeah.
And I thought it was fine. It was unique to the field. I didn't see anything that was affecting anything, so I don't know why all of a sudden they did that.
Said the players wanted it.
Well, they want it, they got it.
Listen, if we are watching a team that's hitting a bunch of pitches back up the middle to the pitcher, we're in big trouble.
Well, I don't know what the beef was about it. I really don't.
I don't know either, because you would think the dirt would make the baseball react differently or make it stop or spin differently than the grass would. I don't know.
Well, ball on dirt, it doesn't skid as much.
Right.
I don't know where it affected one thing or another. So, but if the players wanted that, that's their prerogative, and they shouldn't fight the players on that.
Exactly. But I just had to ask because that was the biggest news of the Tigers.
Well, and also they got rid of the Tigers, and it's going to say Comerica Park.
You know what that Pat was reading about it? And they said that it ran its course, its life ended, or what? I'm like, that thing worked perfectly last year. You're telling me that it's going to be decommissioned or whatever? And I'm like, It was cool. Just say that Comerica spent a ton of money, and that's what we're putting up there.
Yeah.
But don't tell me that. Michigan State tried the same thing with their football scoreboards. They're getting new ones. And I'm like, you just put new ones in like 10 years ago. Yeah, well, they're out of date. Well, you should have put better ones in then.
Well, they weren't even that bad. I mean,
no, they were great.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Did Michigan State, they got rid of the smokestack. I can't even speak. Did you ever see the smokestack?
Oh, I've seen photos, yes.
But you never saw it, actually.
I don't believe so, no.
Yeah, so that was, it's you know, for a long time, it didn't say MSU on it. It said MSC.
Oh, Michigan State College?
Yeah, like it was, you know, so Michigan fans used to make fun of it. So, God. Of course,
oh, Michigan fans making fun. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? So, but anyway, enjoy your baseball. I would say this. You know, I feel, and I don't know how you feel about it, Evan, is when a season starts, we become so focused on what's going to happen, what's not going to happen, is we forget that it's baseball's fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same with the NBA. You know, people are like, well, the Pistons going to be like next year. Are they going to be champions? It's like, hey, you know, enjoy this year. You know, I can't do anything about their team right now. And it's the same with baseball. It's, you know, it's a lot of fun. Win, lose, draw, you know, enjoy the game. It's meant to be enjoyed, not to be obsessed or, you know, getting angry about or whatever. I expect the Tigers, they're doing a good job of building a really quality team. I'm just not so sure the way this is kind of shaken out over the off season, whether it's going to be this year. But again, everything is so fluid. Everything. If we thought in last July they would make the postseason, obviously we would have been, you know, considered crazy. So
we also would have been rich because we probably would have bet on that.
Yeah. Oh boy, you get a lot of money on it, and every year there's surprises.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it looks like, oh gosh, how can anybody beat the Dodgers? Yeah, you know, I'd still take the field against the Dodgers. So we'll have to see. But anyway, don't forget, we appreciate you listening. And so subscribe to us, like us, you know, give us good reviews or whatever. We appreciate that very much. And I enjoy talking to y'all very much and talking to Evan here and doing Bustin' Balls. And this is, Evan and I often talk about, it's our time of the season now because the NFL draft is coming up, the NBA draft, the baseball draft, and the hockey draft. And those things, we get into far more detail than others. And as the Tigers season unfolds, we'll talk about their prospects. I follow that very closely, watch it, and you know, we'll give you all the latest information and hopefully a lot of it that you can't get elsewhere, and in a condensed way that you can just listen and listen easily. And we appreciate it very much. Till next time, we'll talk to you.